C1S. Number 4B.
In other words, she will show us time and time again that if we grasp the divine laws of absolute Christian Science and see that there is nothing ever going on but life, truth and love, the essential nature of being, that that accepting of this fact, that manifests itself on the human plane by itself as, on the level of Christian Science, as mental, as the principle of mental healing, of metaphysical healing. Let us see that closer. But before we can see that, another point. She has said that God has been graciously preparing her for this reception, for being that woman which did take those that leaven. How did she grow to that standpoint, to that inward attitude of being able to accept and conceive a revelation? And she says she has been graciously preparing, being prepared. Now we know from her life the various stages she had gone through in a religious and in a medical way. That, so to say, two strains in her interest have worked together. The one was the religious one, her deep concern of the Bible and reading the Bible, and on the other side, her constant investigation into medicine, first in allopathy, then afterwards in homeopathy. She investigated electricity as a remedial agent, then investigated the mental means of Quimbyism and so on, so that through two various interests, namely science and religion, she came to that point of being receptive for that which would wed science and religion, Christian Science. Also, if we take the various stages through which Mrs. Eddy went, we can see that the main development in her spiritual career coincide with the first five chapters of the textbook. The first thing which is noticeable in Mrs. Eddy's life as a child, that she would withdraw every day for 7 times to pray. That prayer meant so much for her. We have the chapter on prayer as a prerequisite. Then we have Atonement Eucharist. Well, we know that when she was about 16 and was should be admitted as a member of the Congregational Church, she took a very firm stand against one of the points in the doctrine of that church, namely against final judgment, against the doctrine of predestination and of the eternal banishment of the unbelievers. She just couldn't accept that. She just couldn't accept that not all could be atoned to God. And she got an exception from that and was admitted to the church. So she fulfilled, in a certain sense, that which afterwards is the pith of Atonement and Eucharist, that everybody can be saved through atonement. Then we know her big struggles in her marriage, or marriages, how she had to work out a better and higher concept of marriage, how her child was taken away, how unhappy those marriages were, and how she tried to steady the ark as well as she could in order to make a better situation out of it. Then, correlative with the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism, where her stand against those spirit circles that were en vogue in that part of the world. She repudiated through speech and articles the doctrines and practices of spiritualism. So that was a prerequisite for writing later on the chapter on spiritualism. Then came the period with Quimby, where she had to see through mesmerism, hypnotism, animal magnetism. And when that period was over, the fifth chapter, then she had that revelation in 1866, which she denominated then Christian Science. So, looking back over her career, one can see that this graciously preparing was really nothing else than what we go through when we go through the first five chapters in our consciousness. Mrs. Eddy had to experience it because she didn't understand the order yet of what was happening, but the Christ impulsion was forcing her step by step to solve these preparatory steps, which finally led her to be receptive, to be clear enough, to be a clear window pane for the light to shine through. Now, especially the last the chapter, the fifth chapter, it isn't the last, the preceding chapter on animal magnetism unmasked is very important, because we can always see that until one begins to see through the nothingness of animal magnetism, there is no possibility for receiving a higher revelation. I like to think, for instance, of Mary Magdalene, that she was the first one to perceive after the resurrection Jesus. Everybody else who met him didn't perceive the new form of the Christ idea. But Mary Magdalene, of whom it was said that Jesus had cast out seven devils, that state of thought was able to perceive a new form, a new appearing of the old Christ idea. Or if we think of John Dolly, when we asked him over and over and said, why do you think that you were able to see the science in the Christian Science textbook? Why not others? Why wasn't it that others could see it too? And he always gave as a reason, and the main reason, that he said, I always handled animal magnetism every day over years and years. So you see, he again felt quite intuitively, without yet knowing the scientific order of development, he felt intuitively that handling animal magnetism, to cast out the seven devils out of ourselves, is that which is prerequisite for any higher revelation. Today, naturally, we are in a much better and easier situation, because now, through suffering, through experience of Mrs. Eddy and others that went before, the order has been revealed what makes a woman receptive, what makes us receptive and conceptive for a higher ideal. So I'm quite sure that now we have seen the scientific order underlying the preparatory work for being able to have new revelation. So I see that in the measure as we begin to embody in our consciousness the standpoint of prayer, then see Atonement and Eucharist, and then marriage, and then spiritualism, and then animal magnetism unmasked, that culturing that makes us so receptive, makes us transparent for a new revelation. So even if it's said that each revelation comes direct from God, which still is, we must still be woman. We must still be receptive for it, because revelation is ever going on. the biggest revelation, the highest revelations of God are just now going on. The question is, do we receive it? Are we transparent for it? Can we conceive of it? That's the big question. Now, is that just chance that one out of 1,000,000,000 will be receptive? Or can we lift chance out of chance into law? Shall we always stay there where we look at everything as something happening by chance or by special choosing, by being a chosen one or not? Or can we lift chance out of that false concept and see that there is no chance in the world, that there is always a law behind it? That's the deeper meaning of the investigation that has gone on over the last 100 years in physics. Is there any chance, and is there only the law of probability, or is there a deeper law behind it? And you remember that Einstein, even though he couldn't yet build everything together into one coherent whole, he intuitively always said that intuitively he knows that there is but one coherent principle working in the whole universe. And if we haven't seen it yet, well, we'll see it later. But the very fact that we can't see it yet and therefore have to rely on chance doesn't mean that there is chance, but that we haven't grown to the point of seeing that there is law and what the law is. So let's get out of that sense that there are chosen ones, some who have more inspiration than others, some who can receive revelation and others not, that there are some who are chosen ones. No. In a science is impersonal. Science doesn't know any, I never can remember the term in English, when you are chosen, you are
elected.
Elected, yes. That there is no election of a few. In science, which is impersonal, there is only a question, can we see the law? Here, it's the law of preparing our consciousness to the point where it is so transparent that revelation comes to each one. To each one. And we'll see that that is what should happen, that it should come not to me, but to us. And that fundamentally, revelation is a revelation that doesn't come to us, to an individual, but to the us. So, this was the graciously preparing, and I don't think that any one of us who knows the life of Mrs. Eddy, the human life of Mrs. Eddy up to that point, would say that that was a very happy life, a very gracious life. It was a life full of trouble, full of problem, full of disease, full of crisis, and so on. I think she had in her whole life up to that point not many months in which she was really happy. And yet she could say, God has been graciously preparing me. She didn't say, well, God put me certainly through any, we call it cacao, whatever you call it, until I was purified enough. No, she began to see, you see, that behind that whole development, though to mortal sense it was very hurting, very disagreeable, that from the divine sense, from divine point of view, from the Christ point of view, it was a gracious way of preparing her. If only we would think of that in our lives. Because in our lives, I think, each one of us who is going to do anything of any value will have to go through the mud. We'll have somehow have periods where it just doesn't know to which side to turn. The question then is, have we vision enough to see that it is not animal magnetism that is working, but that it is the Christ working? the Christ that wants to graciously prepare us for something bigger. And in order to be prepared for something bigger, something first has to yield, to fall away from us. Some of the elements in our character, in our outlook, in our surroundings, or whatever it is, has to change. Just as yeast changes the chemical properties of meal. It doesn't take away anything, it doesn't give anything, it just translates. Just translates. And the grace of it is, are we going through that Red Sea seeing what is at the other end? Or are we going to think that just hell and high water has been let loose or not? If there is one being, then there is only the idea that is working. Then there is never anything working but the one being. There is never animal magnetism working, because there is no animal magnetism. That's why animal magnetism as a chapter had to precede this chapter, in order to show there isn't any animal magnetism. There is only a belief that there could be animal magnetism. So she debunked animal magnetism first and showed that it is nothing, that it is just our belief that evil can be working, so that when we go through a difficult period, through a difficult time, just know, it isn't animal magnetism that is working. Just know it's the eternal law of life, truth, and love that is working. Because that's the only being there is. There is never, 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 never anything working but the eternal idea of life, truth, and love. It may appear to human sense, to mortal sense, as very exasperating, as very, may give us a sense of suffering and so on, but that's to human sense. And are we going to listen to human sense, or are we going to listen to the divine mind? Are we going to drop below that level where we see only the idea of life, truth, and love is ever at work? And that's jolly good. When eternal life is always at work and says to you, you know, all I want with you is to eternalize you, to support you, to maintain you, to lift you up, to resurrect you, to exalt you. Isn't that wonderful? Or when truth constantly says, I only want to establish you, to establish your true manhood, to establish that which you were before Abraham was, that manhood which is the Son of God, that I want to establish. Isn't that wonderful? Well, naturally, the mortal has to go. Well, let's go. Let him go. See, you see, suffering is really only our attitude towards the divine life, truth, and love. Namely, a false attitude towards the wonderful, gracious working of life, truth, and love. And it's a decision which we have to make inwardly, and that's the main point, not to accept that it is animal magnetism that is working. There is no animal magnetism. And Mrs. Eddy had to find out that through long periods of looking through it, because you know that at the beginning she couldn't see animal magnetism as nothing. She constantly was fighting against it. She constantly was warning against it, and so on. Until after nearly, how many? About 30 years. She changed that chapter so often, to a point where it is hardly recognizable compared with the text of the first edition. There was hardly anything in common anymore, because that was her big point, that she had to investigate animal magnetism and couldn't see it at first right through it. But with every other experience, with every other blow she got, with every other difficulty, she could see further through it, and further through it, and further through it, till at last, in the year 1909 only, she put in the maximum of good is God and his idea. Evil is a suppositional line. It's not only a line, it's even a suppositional line. And so she finished off that sense which we have within ourselves so often, that, oh, it's just animal magnetism that tries to do this and tries to do that. No. Animal magnetism is nothing. All there is the ever-operative life, truth, and love. And what we call animal magnetism is our misunderstanding of accepting that only the idea of life, truth, and love is going on. So if we have cast out those seven evils out of ourselves, those seven evils, that there is anything going on but mind, but spirit, but soul, but principle, but life, but truth, but love, if we have cast out that devil out of ourselves, then we are like Mary Magdalene, receptive to see a completely new form of the Christ idea. And that is the beauty of science. The beauty of science, we always think, with the vision we have at this moment, we say, well, what can we see more? We can't see more. But why is it that suddenly something more comes to us? Why is it that we don't think the same way as we did think 15 years ago? Why is it? Because nobody could tell us something more. Because all what we have been doing since that time had to come out of our own loins, had to come out of our own immediate revelation from God. There was no human teacher to teach us more. How does revelation go on if there is no human form which can be taught or shown or instructed? It comes from God. It always goes on. The idea will go on. We have touched with science an advancing idea, not a static idea. We have not touched an idea which in its present presentation is final. It's an advancing idea. And that it isn't final, that's another question which is brought out in this sentence which we are reading, namely that she has been graciously prepared for the reception of this final revelation of the absolute divine principle. Now, there are, so to say, two schools of thought in the Christian Science movement or in the Christian Science field. The one says that which Mrs. Eddy has written is the last word, because she said it's the final presentation. And there is another school to which I think we all belong, is that we say no. What Mrs. Eddy says here is something very different, that revelation was final with her, that afterwards there is no more revelation. Namely, quite reasonably, she says on another page, she says, even eternity can never reveal the whole of God, since there is no limit to infinitude or to its reflection. Revelation will go on. Revelation didn't stop with the prophets. Revelation didn't stop with Jesus. And so revelation will not stop with Mrs. Eddy. Revelation belongs to God, not to a person, not to an age. So revelation will go on. We will see much more than what Mrs. Eddy has been showing us. And I think that's right, and I think that's what she was hoping for. As a matter of fact, it is said that she said, well, in the life afterwards, we will also have a textbook, but a higher textbook. Well, I don't like to wait until afterwards. But for the moment, I'm quite satisfied with the textbook we have. But the point is, even if the textbook we have, we can read it so or so. We can read it as a religion, or we can read it as science. We can read it as science one day just from the point of view of metaphysics, and then suddenly something happens within our consciousness and we begin to read it from the point of view of science. And so revelation will always go on. What she says here is that what she has written here is this final revelation of the absolute divine principle. She doesn't say the final revelation, but this, for her, the textbook was her final revelation. In other words, she didn't hide from us things which we should know. She gave her highest revelation in the book. In earlier editions, she had that differently. Let me see. Yes. When was that? Doesn't matter, I don't find it. She said that God had been present for a final. She said, for a final. And then she could see that a final would mean really this is final. And so she changed it to this final. So as to say, this here is my final revelation. But it isn't meant that we cannot expect to have more revelation to come. Yes. Let's stop here.